This morning we discuss building apps, and specifically apps for nonprofits. Our tech guru Jesse Feiler is here. Jesse is an app developer, consultant, trainer, and author. His books include iOS 6 Foundations and the forthcoming Sam's Teach Yourself Objective-C Second edition. His apps include Minutes Machine, the iPad-based app for managing meetings, agendas, and minutes, and Saranac River Trail app. He can be reached at northcountryconsulting.com. He brings with him Andrew Alberti. Drew is a program coordinator for Lakes to Locks Passage, a designated scenic byway that extends from Troy to Rouse's Point along the interconnected waterways of northern New York. And it's a great pleasure to welcome both Andrew and Jesse to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Good to be here.
Thank you so much for having us.
So it's great to have you here. Welcome. So Jesse, let us begin with you. You've been working on this, and obviously this is a big part of what you do, of creating these apps. And what's the key to it? I mean, what are you ultimately trying to accomplish?
Well, there are several answers to that. And we're all of us trying to figure out what that is, because this is a very new field, remember?
Right.
But basically what I'm working on now is we're looking at apps. I look at apps as a way of publishing information. It's an alternative to more traditional ways of publishing information, because it can be richer. And one of the things that both Drew is doing and I'm doing and you're probably doing too is keying into location, so that apps can function, can have a life of their own based on where you are and things that you are doing other than manipulating apps. In other words, you're not tapping the screen all the time, but where you are is some of the information that's being presented to you.
Mm.
Is that fair description sort of what you're doing?
Most absolutely.
So as program coordinator, when how would we use an app for this particular group? In the sense of, when it comes to the Lakes to Locks Passage, how do you see us using it?
Well, the Lakes to Locks Passage Port, which is a mobile app which is still in development, we're beginning beta testing at the end of the month, and really what we're aiming to do is deliver a place-based tourism experience. We want to make sure that we are delivering the story in the places where that story happened. So that's really the driving force between the Lakes to Locks mobile app, which is the Lakes to Locks Passage Port.
So you're assuming, in most cases, you're assuming I'm there when I'm using it.
Well, the mobile app really works in a number of ways. It's a storytelling app, first and foremost. So what it'll do is give you an introduction to a theme-based story. And as you follow that story, it'll give you navigation to direct you to place by place. So again, it's about directing people to those places that are special to our area as a way of creating experience rather than visiting individual sites.
So is that in general, or is that through GPS and directing people? Like, you're here and you want to go here.
That's correct. It would be GPS navigation.
And the same for you.
Well, BS, but it also, in both cases, what's happening is that these both are part of an integrated communication strategy, which is sort of a fancy way of saying that the app and the Lakes to Locks website work together, so that the information on one is visible on the other. People can interact with both of them and nominate places to go. So it's, I mean, you've got some social media in there.
Correct.
As people, you know, are saying this is worth seeing, and they're talking to people who may be in Europe planning a trip.
Of thinking of going there.
Yeah, and what I like, who came up with local voice? Is that a geotourism term? I love the idea of local voice. Someone there can say, this is a good place to eat, or this is something that I like to watch. I like to watch the sunsets from this bridge. Is that sort of...
That's absolutely correct. Really, the the idea of guided by locals is something that is really compatible with the Lakes to Locks visitor information delivery system. We are a grassroots organization. We're a very small organization. And we depend on collaborations in order to deliver the story of that place. Therefore, certainly local voice is a big part of what we are doing, but certainly also the Lakes to Locks Passage and National Geographic Geotourism Initiative, really our underlying theme is the guide to the places most respected and recommended by locals. So it's really both compatible with the Lakes to Locks Visitor Information Strategy and this National Geographic Geotourism Initiative.
So it's in a sense, you get, because this is even going back to the old days of travel guides, where you were looking for one that was written by somebody who'd actually been there. It wasn't, they weren't paid, and they had some view, they lived there, they knew where the locals went, and that was the kind of information that you were trying to get.
Yeah, and they were experts because they had lived there. And I, my understanding is that a number of these guides of people who lived in foreign places and knew the best places to go. A number of them, I've been told, apparently were written by CIA people. And that's why... I have heard that more than once.
Yeah.
That's how they got to these places.
Well, it makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, for whatever reason, we don't, you know...
You rely on local people. You do not rely on CIA people, do you?
No, that is correct. We do not have CIA people.
Okay. I'm just...
I wouldn't tell you if I was.
That you know about, right? You make the differentiation, and either consciously or unconsciously, of in the information you send me, of talking about apps specifically for nonprofits. So that's a whole different thing, isn't it? I mean, yes, it's an app and it gets you all this information, but it is different in that because it still is ultimately a nonprofit.
It can, certain things are different because it's a nonprofit and certain things are not. For example, nonprofit apps can be used to sell things. You know, you might sell T-shirts, you might sell also the things that nonprofits sell.
Right.
Memberships. But for-profit apps are mostly geared to the bottom line. But across the board, whether it's for-profit apps or not-for-profit apps, we have to look at a big distinction between apps that are supposed to make money on their own and apps that are part of a communication strategy and are not expected to make money. So, for example, when your bank has an app that you can use to manage your checking account.
Right.
That app is not supposed to make money.
It's
a cost
to
the bank.
You. Right.
It may wind up shifting some printing costs for statements into the app. It may save the bank money. But it's not supposed to make money in the way in which a priced app and it does. And we're still working this out, figuring out how to make money from apps.
So for your organizations, I assume those apps are free, and you want people just to come on and take part and get the information. That's
yes.
What you're most concerned about.
Yes. It's a way of getting information out and involving them.
So how do you measure success?
Well, we have a very specific model for success. Our driving force is to get people to explore these communities along the interconnected waterway. And it's based on the traditional tourism model of divert, divest, and detain. We want to get people off the traditional beaten route, divest them of their funds, and detain them for a while so that we could keep them spending funds in our community. So really, the bottom line with our mobile app is measuring the impact or your return on investment. How many people have actually downloaded the app? How many people downloaded the app and actually went to some of the destinations in there? How many people not only used the app, but then spent the night in that community? How many people ate at a local restaurant? And those types of things. So there is an actual calculable return on investment.
What is the investment? Is it a large investment?
Well, sometimes. And I think this goes back to the difference between a not-for-profit mobile app and a for-profit mobile app. And, you know, really, in a not-for-profit, you have this particular challenge that we very traditionally work from grant funding. And the challenge with working with grant funding...
Fun, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a blast.
Yeah, it's a huge challenge because technology moves so fast.
Yeah.
So you can develop an app for today that 2 years from now is, you know, outdated. So how do you keep up?
And that's when you actually
get
the check from the grantee. Yeah.
That's correct.
And right.
A lot of these times, these grants, you know, you're talking about a 3-4 year process
right.
between the time that you submit the application, it's granted, you get a contract, and you're moving forward. So this idea of using community funds to move forward with technology presents a real challenge for us developers in the sense that we don't have the ability to move with the pace of for-profit technology.
Right. And God love the people who are doing this and offering the money and offering the grant opportunities so that this can happen at all, which is wonderful. But it is an interesting challenge because you're trying to get it done and have it always be, you know, on target and the latest technologically, and then that moves with the speed
but
of sound.
Even though it's moving very quickly, I do think it is possible to see the outlines of where we are.
Yeah.
And where we're going. For instance, location is big. It's very, very big. Recently we talked about the low energy Bluetooth, which is a much finer targeted location technology than GPS. So we can see that's important, and we can see location is probably going to be, I think one of the biggest challenges in mobile apps, probably for the next quite a few years. Maybe there's something else coming out this afternoon. But
but as of 11:48, we seem to...
Yeah, I think. And of course, we do know what's coming out this afternoon. So.
Well, I could tell you that as far as the Lakes to Locks Passage Port is concerned, we really started with an idea that came out of Google and their new app, which is Field Trip. And what the Field Trip does is it uses your GPS location and then identifies certain points in the landscape. But it never directed you to that point. It just told you when you were there and then told you why that place was important. So there was no real experience. And that's what we're looking to do. We're looking to create an experience that encourages people to spend some more time along the byway. So that is really the driving force of what we're looking at is, again, getting from person to point A to point B along a theme-based story.
And, of course, I think that's very important because one of the things that you said when you were talking about diverting people and so forth.
Right.
And we see it in Plattsburgh very much because we have many visitors who come to Plattsburgh. Quite a few are coming from Canada. And they come down and they get off the Northway at the main exit in Plattsburgh, and there's a traffic light there. And they stop at the traffic light, and ahead of them, not even a quarter mile away, they see the mall.
Right.
And they go to the mall. Because that may be why they came to Plattsburgh. What we're trying to do is to get the people who know how to get off the Northway, go straight ahead to the mall and turn back and go to Montreal. We're trying to get them to explore Plattsburgh by showing them, as you're doing, mm-hmm. here are things that you can see. And to me, the very, very important part of mobile apps now is we say, trust us, we won't let you get lost because we will show you how to get there. And we promise we'll show you how to get back to the Northway.
We'll get you back.
That's our very specific project.
So I have two questions. One is more technical than the other, but let me begin with the less technical, which is if you have the content, I mean, as an organization, you have the content, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, you're using technology in the sense of the GPS and telling people whether to go right or left and what's there. But in telling them what's there, you have that already, right? I mean, in some cases, you're using what you have to kind of fill in those blanks.
But we found, and I think you found too, Drew, that getting that content is, particularly if you're getting it from bless their heart, volunteers.
Yeah.
It is a challenge. It is a challenge.
Okay. Absolutely. So, I mean, if you want people to go, you use this analogy of getting off the Northway and getting at the stoplight and the mall straight ahead. You want them to take a right to see the oldest barn in Plattsburgh. So you have to find the information about that oldest barn in Plattsburgh.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then, so that information may or may not exist.
Probably not. Yeah. But contact, it doesn't matter if you're a nonprofit or for-profit, if you're doing a location-based, if any kind of app. What I've seen with the apps I've worked on and that friends have worked on and that I've seen being developed, the biggest challenge isn't technical, it's content.
And I could tell you from the experience here at Lakes to Locks that our website is user-generated. It allows locals to input information to the website so that you get that local voice, and they're doing the research, the information, and developing it. What we're doing is taking that step forward. If you have that historic barn in Plattsburgh, why is that barn important? What other barns are there nearby? And how can we tell that story? And then what we do is we take that narrative, the entire story of the historic barns of Plattsburgh or whatever it may be, and then we create a tour. So again, you're getting back to that traditional tour model, although not directed by the CAA, directed by people who are local and, you know, they're actual people on the ground. So it's about taking that step further, which we do through not only the text and images, but also audio and video.
You talked about Google a moment ago and using, you know, they're kind of taking a lead from them, which brings up the question of, given that there are wars of what we put these apps on, how much of a pain is that for you? I mean, does it have to be a general app that goes to everything, or do you try to narrow and put it into either something that's most popular to use the technology that is specific to this unit over that unit?
My feeling is, in terms of looking at the other things, what I think we both have with these apps is this local voice, the fact that it's coming from the community. And we're not trying to do everything.
Right.
And when we're looking at local businesses, we are looking at local businesses.
So you don't. So your app will work on an iPhone. Your app will work on an Android. Your app will.
I'm sorry. Our app was developed by a humble volunteer. Me.
Hello, Mr. Humble.
And I'm not interested in programming for Android, but I've said if someone wants to volunteer to do it for the same price, free on Android, I'll help.
Right.
You know, so.
What I find this interesting is that I know when I was on vacation last month, we went to both, we were in some wonderful state, Montana, and we were in Montana and then in Canada, and we were at the national parks when they were open. Mm-hmm. And but whenever you went to a place, there would be whether it was either part of the National Park Service or something in Canada, where you would get up to the sign and say, to find out more information, here's this app that will help you. And some of them would be for an iPhone, some of them would be for an Android, some of them would be for this or be for that, and half the people who approached that sign were busy plugging into their phone, and the other, you know, by the way, good luck getting service. That's also another issue, which I think is really funny, is that they have these great ideas, but there's no way to actually download them when you're in these remote locations. Mm-hmm. But also, and then half the people kind of turn away and say, okay, well, I can't use that.
Well, yeah, but one of the ways of addressing this, which you do, is when you integrate an app with a website. The website is accessible to anyone with a browser, including a smartphone, mm-hmm. as long as they have an internet connection. So there are ways of, if you can't implement everything, there are ways of addressing it.
We faced a huge challenge in that most of Adirondack Park does not have any data service.
Right.
So if you're traveling these back roads, most certainly you're not going to be able to access information via your phone. And the way that we were able to resolve that is by condensing the file format so that it was small enough that you could download it, and it relies solely on your GPS, which is always available. So again, this is something that's stored locally. Now, there are pieces of it that are too big to condense within that format, such as video, and you would probably have to use data service in order to use that, but you could always access that later. So again, our goal was to deliver something that was independent of the necessity of data service.
Jesse Filer provides consulting services to small businesses and nonprofits. His website, and you can find, you have links up, I assume?
Yeah, I have links to locks on it.
Excellent. Is northcountryconsulting.com. Drew Alberti is program coordinator for Lakes to Lock Passage, and you can learn more about them by going to lakestolocks.org, and find information on our website, of course, at wamc.org. Drew and Jesse, thank you so much for telling us about this and sharing with us this morning. I appreciate it.
Good to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.